Dr. Michelle Hu, thank you so much for coming onto the Hear Us Out podcast to tell us about you, about being a pediatric audiologist. Why don't you start off by telling our listeners about yourself, because you yourself have hearing loss. So tell us your backstory.
Yeah, thank you, Michelle and Eric, for having me here. At the very basics of it, all I am a human being. I'm a mom. I happen to be a pediatric audiologist. And during COVID, I created a platform because I wanted to connect with my patients. And the biggest gift was me connecting with my deaf and hard of hearing community, whom for decades I kind of held at an arm's length because I didn't feel deaf enough, but I also didn't feel like I was a hearing person. So I didn't know where I fit into that world. And, you know, flash forward, became an audiologist, started working with parents of hearing parents of children who are deaf and hard of hearing, somehow landed on social media. And I have a new book coming out probably in a couple months, second edition of my guidebook for hearing parents, and really excited about that. So thank you for having me here.
Our pleasure. Tell us a little bit about the motivation to write the book and the feedback that you've gotten from families and from parents, from your experience and your words of wisdom, that you can kind of toe this line of both the professional understanding, but also being in the patient chair and receiving care for hearing loss.
I love getting this question. In the beginning, I missed the feeling that I was helping somebody, the feeling that I could make an impact on someone else, feeling confident in their journey, feeling like, okay, yeah, this is the right choice for me and my family. That's when I started my Instagram, but thousands of parents were asking me, you know, what is your life like? How do you wake up when your babies cry in the middle of the evening? How do you feel when you go into a new situation, you don't know anybody? Many of these questions I had been getting as an audiologist anyways. And I realized these are the same questions all across the world. I was getting messages from internationally, all over the place. And I thought, how can I help them? How can I do something that, you know, only I can answer? Only I have grown up in a small town in Ohio with immigrant parents who didn't really know what it was like to raise children in the United States because they grew up in Hong Kong, didn't have Google, didn't have, you know, a strong support system within parenting a child with disabilities. So I thought, you know, I want to give something to that mom, to that parent who my mom was 40 years ago. I want to be able to support the child I was 5, 6, 7 years old, when I was like, am I Chinese? Am I American? Am I hearing? Am I not? Like, am I the patient? Am I the professional? That little 5-year-old self was really who was kind of fueling my whole mission, because I was lost during those times. And I just started creating what would have helped me and my parents, my mom and dad. It just somehow became a book. It became an online program with videos. It became, you know, deaf and hard of hearing pajamas. I never thought that I'd go to school, become a doctor, and then be making pajamas that are just so popular. Like, you never, you limit yourself if you think you can only do certain things or stay within the square box. So, long answer to your question. It really was that 5-year-old Michelle and then her parents that I'm really trying to serve and trying to give a hug to, so to say, give that extra oomph of, you've got this. You are living the life that, you know, you're supposed to, however the way you want to create it. And it doesn't have to look a certain way. You don't have to go to school, get a 9-to-5 job to be successful or to be happy. Sit with yourself for a little bit and know that everything that you need is already within you. It's up to you to choose which way you want to go.
Absolutely.
And you've been practicing as a pediatric audiologist for a number of years. Mm-hmm. So I imagine that it's very different interacting with parents. I'm going to use quotes, when you're interacting with them in person versus distributing an online course that they are than interacting? It's watching videos and courses. Is that correct?
It's an online video course. I'm giving parents information, giving them interactive types of conversations, as well as interviewing ENT, SLP, AVT, deaf moms, hearing moms of deaf children, and I'm asking all of the questions that I've heard parents ask me or think about. They're nervous about asking the ENT, so they'll ask me. I ask all those questions to the ENT so that they can be in the comfort of their own home, be like, okay, I should go to the ENT when they have an ear infection. Oh, maybe a speech language evaluation when my kid has a fever isn't the best idea. You know, those kinds of questions so they can feel more confident navigating.
Do you get responses or interaction with the parents that are using your course? Because I find that communicating with patients in the physical room, you develop a rapport over time. So then does that translate to the online platform? Have you developed rapport with the patients and the parents that you're dealing with?
Absolutely. They can write in questions. They can email me. They can DM me. I did start a Facebook community just for those who are part of the course. I got busy. So right now it's not thriving. However, I am available and I do offer one-on-one consultations if needed. I'm thinking about maybe creating like a group meeting once a month for those parents. It's just, I really trust and want to follow what they need.
And something I like in what you're talking about is in past conversations we've had on the podcast, we've discussed with parents how the information can be overwhelming, that first of all, with identification of hearing loss, are you even getting all this information your doctor's throwing at you? And is it landing? Are you internalizing it? Are you learning from it? Or is it just too much? And this idea of having a resource from somebody who understands not only the professional process, but the patient process, and have that be something that you can go back to and look at it once and look at it again and look at it again, so that those same questions are going to come up more than once for parents. And sometimes having that set resource, it's such a great thing to put out in the world, because we know this from doing it, how much time it takes to provide the care that our patients need, especially our pediatric patients, especially our pediatric cochlear implant patients, that when there's a resource that you could draw on that's questions, it's so, so useful. And I really like the idea of answering the questions you wanted answered, or that you would have thought your parents would have wanted answered. It's such a good guidepost when you've come out the other side and realize, hey, I'm living this great life. I'm living the life I want to live. The parent of the three-year-old can recognize that there's nothing to hold their child back within this hearing loss, or of the high schooler that, yep, they got this far and they're going to keep going and they're going to be just fine. Are there stories you've heard from your patients as feedback from this information that you're putting out there that's like, yep, this is why I did it. This is kind of feeding the motivation behind it.
Yeah. When I first started this process, I came from a very audiology and ENT point of view. And I've definitely shifted to family-centered, family-focused, because I may have stemmed from, you know, should I sign with my kids? Should I not sign? Should I get a cochlear implant? Is it their choice? Is it their body? All of those debates that were going on in between the deaf community, hearing parents meeting the deaf community. And I was like, you know what? It's your choice. Like, why are you doing exactly what the doctor says, which is what my parents did, because, you know, that's how medical healthcare worked. When you know that this is what works for your family, you know how strongly you feel about preserving your cultural traditions within your family. You know, I was the only Chinese kid growing up in my high school. Like, what are you doing? Why is red underwear so important today? Or why are you just wearing red? Are the colors, you know, so important? Why are you celebrating your birthday eating long life noodles? And I always felt like that minority, that outsider. Well, I'm seeing a lot of Latino Hispanic families here in San Diego And I need to understand their dynamic. You know, mom and dad are both working more, you know, mom's working days, dad's working nights. Some clinicians would be like, why is it so hard for them to get into their appointment? Well, think about this. They're living paycheck to paycheck. You know, only one of them is going to show up to that appointment. How are they going to take that English spoken information, take it back to dad, tell dad we need to raise this much amount of money for this? And he's like, well, all I hear is I have to work 40 extra hours a week in order to pay for this because my kid needs it just because my wife said so. I created a whole bunch of lists of questions to have with your co-parent or your partner to be able to get on that same page because so much of that information is lost. You get 20 to 30% when you're in the appointment with your child, with a clinician. How much of that is getting translated at home? Maybe 5 to 10%, if that. I forgot your question.
In terms of having impact with individuals and where, like you just said that, hey, 20 to 30% of the information is even landing in the time with your doctor. And then when you go home and you relay it to somebody else, how much is lost or misunderstood from that point on? That have you gotten feedback from people who've utilized your resources that has kind of led you to think, yep, this is why I did it. This is why I'm in this.
Yeah, I've had parents go back to certain interviews. I've had parents go back to certain modules. And I tell them, this is go at your own pace. It stretches from identification, which is usually, you know, 1 year, 6 months to a year. And it goes all the way up to high school. You don't need the high school information during that first or second year post-diagnosis. You might need the school information, high school information in middle school. It depends on where your kid is at. And I have parents saying, I take that handbook with me to my appointments because I don't remember what I wrote down, you know, when they first got diagnosed. I am such a different place now. And that shows it really gives them that feeling of empowerment that they've come a long way already. Write down your thoughts that you are processing through when you get handed that diagnosis or identification. You feel like it's something that I did, you know, that you did. You feel like it's something that you did or didn't do while you were pregnant with the child. You feel like it's your fault. Okay, I want you to process and focus on that, even though all of these appointments are going, you know, on and on, with how you view your child's disability significantly impacts how your child views their own disability. And that's where I'm helping the kids. I'm helping the kids from family and then on. And, you know, my children are mini me's. They're copying what I'm doing. And I'm like, oh shit, they're doing how I thought. They might not even be saying it, but they're doing certain actions just because they've seen me do it that way, or that's how we do it in this house. And that makes me shift and pivot instantly if that's not something that I, you know, eventually want them to serve well in the future. So yeah, I do get a lot of feedback from parents. They take the book with them. They give it to their friends. They buy copies for their friends. A couple of university like masters in deaf education and audiology programs are seeing if they can incorporate it into their curriculum, like their textbook. So I've created a certificate. If you completed this, now you get a certificate, because one director said it would be amazing if they could put that on their resume, that they went through your program. It's a very family-centered, family-styled approach to empowering the children and their families as a whole versus audiologists being the gatekeepers and saying, you're going to do this because I know all the research and evidence-based data. But, you know your kid best, like go do your thing. But it's more like, you do know your kid best. I know the data, let me give it to you to support you. And then you make the choice based on whatever you feel matches your dynamic better.
I actually do think that this would be such a good tool for audiologists to have. Just at least when I was starting, I found, how do you drop this bomb? You don't know as the clinician where to start. And any wrong line that you deliver can have a huge impact, whether you're not saying it seriously enough so that they take it seriously, or you're saying too much that will scare them. Mm-hmm. So it's a fine line for the delivery, the words to use, and understanding what you're going to receive back from the parents. You don't know if you're going to get tears or denial or an overwhelming, what do I do now? That it's helpful for audiologists to be able to be prepared for all of those things.
And if not taught in the classroom,
not at all.
It might be taught in clinic if you're lucky enough to get a mentor or preceptor who practices that way. I tell my first year students, you'll learn how to do an audiogram. You can do it. Just practice pushing the buttons and you've learned the things in the textbook. What I want to know is, how do you call your patient's name when you call them back? How do you greet them? How do you make them feel when they're coming up the ramp? Do you tell them that the ramp is going to start going? Do you, you know, just keep their eye contact? Do you turn your head away from them? Well, you're talking to somebody who potentially might have a hearing loss. What are you doing so that you're with them? And I think it's so important to me because I was that kid, because my mom was that mom. And my pediatric audiologist, she stuck like 7 or 8 students in the room with us because she knew I could handle it, because she knew, you know what, she's just going to be fine. She loves talking to people. She loves answering questions. And the data is the data. Like, she's going to raise her hand, or she'll do that. We can talk with her and I won't be afraid because I know that they're learning and I want to help them learn it, which is how she explained it to me. So of course, I was more than happy to be with them. Oh, they're learning to be like you, Dr. Flexer. They're learning how to be a pediatric audiologist or an audiologist in general. And it, you don't see it that often. Mm-hmm. You just see clinicians. I don't know. And they say maybe it comes with experience. I think it's maybe part personality, but also part environmental. You need to see somebody else thinking bigger picture, outside the box. You know, I see that they're nervous. Maybe I should ask them, what's going on? What's making you nervous first before just powering through all of the different tests and procedures that we have to do? Maybe they're worried about their gas bill. I don't know. You know, if you can acknowledge that you do see anxiety on their face and they can be a little bit more calm, because then they might feel seen and heard.
Absolutely. And we like to tell our students, case history starts the minute they walk in the door and start interacting with your staff. It's not mm-hmm. just this formal 10 minutes before you start testing where you have your pen and paper out. It's, what's their tone? How are they interacting with the staff? Are they nervous? Is that informing you and in how you're going to interact with these people? All of this is really valuable information that if you are taking that in as the clinician, you're going to give your patient a better experience. And it sounds like you're putting a lot of focus there. And for students, they don't have a lot of time to kind of fumble through the explanations that
pediatrics.
Yeah. No clinical supervisor is going to allow a second or third year student to explain the identification of a hearing loss to a parent of a 2-year-old.
I would.
Because it's something that is just so delicate that at best you're learning by listening, and there's a lot of limitation there. So having these resources that also younger clinicians, any clinician, can understand, hey, this is what it's like to be on the other side of the desk receiving this information. It's something that I think as audiologists, we should be focusing more on, and the people in front of us and how we interact, how we speak to them, how we convey our information. And if you've created this resource that can be used by both the patient and the clinician, what a good place for the two to be meeting.
The space that definitely hasn't been fully filled yet. And I am starting to see it more. It's all in communication, it's all in mindset, and it's all in preparation of communication. Like, I would let a student tell a parent of a 2-year-old, we've identified your child with hearing loss, or, you know, hypodysplasia on both sides. And I just went to China on a mission trip, and I had a student or a patient who had a cochlear implant. Mom says they've been going for mappings for the last 6 months since activation, and her kid still really isn't hearing. Like, okay, what's going on? Taking a look at all the parameters. Okay, let's raise it up. Nothing's happening. Nothing's happening. What were the scans like? You know, and medicine is definitely different over there. Mm-hmm. But I had to tell her, this is what's going on. Break her heart for the second time now, saying that what they did to try to fix it or give you a solution didn't work. And she said, then what was the last 6 months for? I said, I don't know. They might have been trying to figure it out. I'm not going to point any fingers and blame. They were hoping that this would be a solution for you. And I need you to take some time to process it. But know that we are here for you. Know that there are different ways of communicating. Know that you have a community here at this rehabilitation center. And we are here to support you in whatever way, shape, or form that you want to choose for your family. I can make recommendations, but if you need more time to grieve, absolutely. Let's have a one-on-one and, you know, sit tight. If you need me to repeat it, I will say it again, you know, but the truth is the best gift mm-hmm. because I don't want to keep on leading her on. And I had to do this with an English to a Chinese translator who was an audiology student in China. And she's looking at me like, you want me to say what? I'm like, okay, let me simplify it a little bit more. Take all the emotion out. She will feel the emotion in my voice, but take the sugarcoating of it out of your words and say, these are the facts and I'm here for you.
That is fascinating to think about the cultural aspect, the language barrier that comes with giving bad news. We do it in our office a little bit with more Spanish speaking patients, and we do have a translator, and it does sometimes feel simplified or like we're trying to give the general overview, take out some of the details that could be harder to translate because you don't always know that everything that's being translated is in the exact phrasing that we had originally said it. And
it's such a fine line because they're not stupid. They're not dumb.
For sure.
We need to give it to them in layman terms, but also feel like this is information I'm giving to you. You are still their parent. You were chosen to be their parent, and maybe this is why they were born. Maybe this is what they were meant to be up to in life. Maybe this is the first challenge, and guess what? You get to help them through it.
We've had, in the context of this sort of conversation, discussions about how it builds resilience and to think about bigger picture for the child, for your child, how... Yeah, it can be something to overcome, but they're really going to be fine and they're going to develop a lot of strategies to advocate for themselves, to seek out what they need, and they will be more resilient in the world because of this challenge that they've faced. And to try and help our patients' families see that there's more to the individual than just the hearing loss. And as one of our other guests said, it's not going to be the most interesting thing about them. And there's no reason for that to be the case. What I'm curious about is how you prep the student to effectively deliver that message.
So I always have them watch me. If it's the first time, I'm not going to let them do it. I always have them watch me, and except for delivering bad news, I'm otherwise narrating what I'm doing, how I'm thinking. I think I'm going to do this. Ooh, I'm sensing maybe a fake malingerer, or I'm sensing a conductive hearing loss might be coming up. So I'm going to set it up this way. I'm going to do, you know, this first, or I'm going to whisper and ask them what school they go to first to find out if they answer my question.
We love that tactic.
Okay. If it's a new ID, I have them watch me. And afterwards, I tell them, I was watching mom's leg. It was shaking. You know, I'm watching mom's face. She's not making eye contact with me. Okay. I'm not going to bulldoze and go through with this information because she's not going to get any of it. I'm going to touch her knee if she will let me. I am going to hold her child or give her child a toy because mom needs to not be distracted by the kid right now. I tell them, or I match my affect with theirs. The biggest thing I tell my students and anybody in life is meet them where they're at, as well as meet yourself where they're at, if it applies. But meet them where they're at. They're nervous. They're nervous that you're going to give them the worst nightmare. Okay, how can we give them their worst nightmare with a hug? How can we do that? Or maybe they're not fit. Like, you can see body language, don't touch me. I don't want to hear this information. And I will ask them. I will say, I do have some news that you might not want to hear. How would you like me to give it to you? Do you want me to just explain the graph? Or would you like me to explain what that there are solutions, you know, first? And you see where they're at, because they know how they process things. They know what's going to hurt them or help them in the best way. And if you give them the option, it's kind of like a toddler, they gain some power or control over the situation. And everybody wants to control a situation, it gives them more comfort. And if they say, oh, there are going to be some solutions, like, you know, in their brain, there are some options that I can do later. It's not like the sky is falling. I say, absolutely not. I am going to give you more specific information, but yeah, do know that your child will be able to learn to speak if that's what you want them to. Do know that they will be able to learn how to communicate. Maybe it may look differently, but they will be able to communicate in a beautiful, rich language if that's how you guys get to rally together as a team. But guess what? This challenge, and sometimes I don't always tell them that I have hearing loss or not, because that's me. It's nothing to do with them. Sometimes that might be the last thing that they want, because someone's just like, oh yeah, I'm living life. It's great. I'm doing awesome. I'm successful. Like, shut up. Like, you know, like, this is happening to me and my child right now. They get to be that victim. They get to sit in that chair and grieve and cry and think, woe is me, because this is their moment. I'm just a messenger. So I back up, I meet them where they're at. I try to meet their same affect and reiterate what they may have said to me and clarify what I'm hearing from you is you're nervous on how to tell your spouse about this when you get home. Would you like me to give you some words? Would you like me to give you some pictures? If you would like to, would you like to record my voice? Not always, but, you know, would you like to record how I explain this? Or do you want to get him on FaceTime so that I can explain it to him too? Just really honoring them where they're at. And they are the most powerful person in their child's life right now, not me.